If your spouse does something really foolish, what is your obligation to protect him or her? Welcome to The Good Word. I'm Alden Thompson, your host for our discussion today, and our character, background characters of Old Testament, is Abigail. My conversation partners are again two members of the Walla Walla University School of Theology, Dave Thomas and Paul Dibdall. Now, let me come to that question, but let me do it against the backdrop of a brief summary of the story. Turns out that David and his men were wandering in the wilderness and decided that they would protect a man's flocks and herds, namely Nabal, and after they had protected him for a while, apparently effectively, they decided to send him a bill. And so they sent some men to Nabal and said, we protected you. None of your people ever got hurt. We'd like some food. And Nabal says, well, nothing doing. All of these people running away from their masters. Well, his wife Abigail heard this and knew that there would be trouble afoot. So she quickly gets some things together and sends them to David. And we have this amazing conversation between David and Abigail. And he recognizes that she saved him from doing something dangerous. But let me come back to that question that I started with now. If your spouse does something really foolish, what is your obligation to protect him or her? Did Abigail do the right thing, and what was motivating her to do what she did?
Love, maybe.
Maybe.
I think that's the obligation with our spouse. There are times where love may cause us to allow them to experience the consequences of a foolish choice. And then there are times where love would lead us to respond in ways to try to protect them from the consequences of a foolish choice. Is that dodging the question, Alden?
You know, Alden, many years ago, a woman who I did not know came to visit me. She had just discovered that a year and a half before, her husband had taken all the tools and equipment in his garage and hidden it in a storage unit and then turned it in as a break. He'd made it look like it was a break-in, and he turned in for insurance. And he had received something like $32,000 from the insurance. And she had finally, after a year and a half, she'd always thought this was strange. She didn't know what happened, but she'd finally figured out what happened. And she came to me wanting to know what she should do.
And you told her?
Well, see, in my opinion, if you do something that's just foolish but not illegal or immoral, then I think that a spouse has a much higher standard to be protective. But I think if it's illegal or immoral, that the standard of protection from a spouse really should go way down. I believe that she confronted him. I told her that she should just talk to him and say, look, I know what you did, and, you know, I can't abide by that. So you need to figure out either to tell the insurance company or pay back the money, but you need to make it right. And that's the only time I ever saw her, so I don't know what
you know what happened, yeah.
But we wouldn't, if a spouse was speeding, we wouldn't make a call to the highway patrol and say, well, my spouse is breaking the law, you should.
No.
So.
No. Yeah.
Now, that raises another question, which is only
maybe
10.
Maybe we should.
Maybe we should.
But, I mean, if your wife habitually sped,
yeah.
I mean, I think spouses should deal with it face to face. But I mean, if the person actually does something, and I don't know, I guess as laws about speeding, they are laws, but I don't see them with the same category as theft and you know, stuff like that.
Well, when it comes to family members, I mean, my parents, before they died, both of them, told me individually, privately. My mother said, your dad really shouldn't be driving. He can't see well enough. And Dad said to me privately, your mother really shouldn't be driving. You know, she can't see well enough. Yeah. And I finally got them together. But how do you take your driver's license away from your parents? You know, and when the fatal accident came, my first question was anyone else involved? Because I was afraid that it was because of their failed eyesight that it really happened. Now, the other question that I wanted to ask here, don't we cut more slack for adults than we do for children? In other words, when we see children doing certain things, we intervene and we discipline them. But when that same behavior comes up in adults, we don't take those same rigors, and especially if it is a spouse or a parent or something like that. Yeah.
But, see, Alden, this question really opens up this whole thing of codependency, too. I mean, what about the spouse of an alcoholic who calls in sick for them, you know, who covers this? You know, I was shocked at my first pastoral assignment. The pastor who preceded me turned out to be an alcoholic. He was a closet alcoholic. And, you know, his family had covered for him for years. See?
Yeah.
I mean, you think of the damage that does. If there's remedial work to be done, the sooner it begins, the better.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I happen to think that Abigail did the right thing.
Right.
Nabal had acted in a very churlish and selfish and cantankerous way, and she saw his behavior. She didn't confront him, but she just went behind his back to make it right. And, of course, this story was much more interesting in the days when wives, the vows at the wedding said, promised to love, cherish, honor, and obey. See, that vow is different now. But in her day, it was obey.
Well, and really, she does, her action is something which helps to protect her husband. It's in his best interest.
Yeah.
Even though he had behaved in inappropriate ways.
But see, I also think this is an issue of conscience, this particular one. And I think that when it comes to spouses, that when it comes to issues of conscience, it is your privilege to live with the issues of conscience your spouse has, not to hide them. And I have no right to tell my wife what her issues of conscience should be. And I think Nabal had no right to tell Abigail that she had acted inappropriately.
Yeah.
This is a very good question, Alden. I don't know that we're going to solve
why
it
I like
today.
Abigail,
but
that she acts based on her own conviction of conscience, regardless of what other people thought.
Now, I would like to read, because I'd like for us to characterize Nabal, Abigail, and David, but I want to read Abigail's response to David when she arrives. It's a masterpiece.
Diplomatic, so...
When Abigail saw David, she hurried and alighted from the donkey, fell before David on her face, bowing to the ground. She fell at his feet and said, "Upon me alone, my lord, be the guilt. Please let your servant speak in your ears and hear the words of your servant. My lord, do not take seriously this ill-natured fellow Nabal, for as his name is, so is he, Nabal, which means fool, and folly is with him. But I, your servant, did not see the young man of my lord whom you sent. Now then, my lord, as the Lord lives, and as you yourself live, since the Lord has restrained you from blood guilt, and from taking vengeance with your own hand, now let your enemies and those who seek to do evil to my lord be like Nabal." Now what David had said here, I'll just parentheses, he says, boy, strap on your weapons, tomorrow there'll not be one male left alive, that all belongs to Nabal. So he was hot and ready to roll. Continuing with what she said, "Now let this present that your servant has brought to my lord be given to the young men who follow my lord. Please forgive the trespass of your servant, for the Lord will certainly make my lord a sure house, because my lord is fighting the battles of the Lord. And evil shall not be found in you so long as you live. If anyone should rise up to pursue you and seek your life, the life of my lord shall be bound in the bundle of the living under the care of the Lord your God. But the lives of your enemies he shall sling out as from the hollow of a sling. When the Lord has done to my lord according to all the good that he has spoken concerning you and has appointed you prince over Israel, my lord shall have no cause of grief or pangs of conscience for having shed blood without cause or for having saved himself. When the Lord has dealt well with my lord, then remember your servant." I mean, that's a masterpiece.
Pour it on, Abigail.
Now, David says, and this is the other thing, "Wow, you saved my life." Is very honest. This is one of the things, good things about David. Now, if I were to ask you, and we've covered a lot of this already, I would like just a thumbnail sketch of Nabal, of Abigail, and David based on this story. Could you give me a thumbnail sketch of each of those three so that we can see them over against each other?
David does have, I mean, he has a bit of a temper, as illustrated in the story.
Yeah.
A sense of justice. What ought to have been done. Abigail is certainly able to take the initiative, diplomatic. Nabal, foolish, a fool.
Yeah.
Nabal, I think his name seems to fit him well in the story.
Yeah.
Yeah. I see Abigail as somebody who had a very broad vision. She's a woman of integrity, but also great wisdom. Mm-hmm. And when I read this, it looks to me like she's been covering for Nabal for quite some time. Mm-hmm. What does astonish me a bit, though, is her distancing herself from Nabal, you know, this foolish fellow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's amazing.
She understood her husband pretty well.
Yeah, and this may not have been the first time, like you said, Dave, that she'd had to cover for him, as
yeah,
it were.
Yeah, yeah.
But it probably was the most dramatic time.
But this response of David, I didn't read it, but let me read it. David said to Abigail, "Blessed be the Lord, the God of Israel, who sent you to meet me today. Blessed be your good sense, and blessed be you who have kept me today from blood guilt."
That's the phrase I'm looking for, good sense.
Good sense, yeah. "From blood guilt and from avenging myself by my own hand. For as surely as the Lord God of Israel lives, who has restrained me from hurting you, unless you had hurried and come to meet me, surely by morning there would not have been left in Nabal so much as one male." Mm-hmm. See, so David is just absolutely honest and said, "You did the right thing, and boy, you saved me." And I really like that about David. He was a hot temper, but when he realized he'd done something wrong.
But I also think that this is an interesting example of a real apology. You know, we hear apologies today that if I have somehow offended you, then I'm sorry. You know, there's none of that here. That Abigail, in humility and grace, goes to David and says, "Look, my household has done you wrong. I'm here to make amends." And I think that the power of that is evident here.
Yeah. Now, there's one last question here, and this is kind of an unhappy one. What does the story of David tell us about polygamy? It says that he took, when Nabal died, which he does, he then sent messengers and he won Abigail, took him as a wife. Verse 43 of chapter 25, David also married Ahinoam of Jezreel. Both of them became his wives. Saul had given his daughter Michal, David's wife, to Palti, son of Laish, who was from Galim. How would you characterize the Old Testament view of polygamy?
Well, it's practiced in the Old Testament.
Practiced.
Yes, it's quite normal. And if you can have more than one wife, you have more than one wife.
And what's the result of having more than one wife?
Usually trouble.
Always trouble.
But you have to be careful, Alden, because people will tell you that we have polygamy here, too. It's just serial.
Serial. Like but if you look at the story of...
That creates trouble, too.
Yeah. If you have the story of Jacob, trouble. Hannah, trouble. And here, one of the most painful things is when David finally gets settled in, he sends for Michal, and her husband comes after weeping, and he is sent back. So it's really a very painful thing. I don't think polygamy is a good idea, and I think the stories of the Old Testament illustrate that. Thank you, Paul and Dave, for helping us with our discussion today. Next week, our discussion will be Uriah, Faith of a Foreigner. My thanks to Chet Ofterhauer, our program engineer, and to all of you for listening in. For The Good Word, I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.